Hey, what's up? This is Ashley, and I'm your host of the Kilter & Mint podcast. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to start off by acknowledging, honoring, and respecting the unceded territories on which I live. I currently live in Langley, which is on the unceded territories of the Kwantlen, Matsqui, Katsi, and Semiamu First Nations. And I highly encourage you to research and cultivate a deeper connection of the land you are on, not only of the people who were here before us, but are very much so still here. You can find out more information on unceded territories and land acknowledgements by downloading the app Whose Land or checking out the website Native Land. Okay, great. Well, let's get into today's episode 62 featuring Dylan Archambault.
Is that doing anything?
You're so weird.
Can we ASMR the whole thing too?
Okay, try ASMR right now.
Hey baby, it's me, Del. How's it going?
There's some holes in this house. There's some holes in this house. There's some holes in this house. But you know you're with some wet ass.
Okay, let's do that the whole time.
Okay, great. We are recording.
Great.
As we do.
Great.
And I'm really excited for this podcast because we didn't prep.
No.
On purpose. I wanted to make sure that it was off the cuff and candid and just kind of like one of our regular conversations that you and I have.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, usually inappropriate, so we'll keep it PG-13.
No fart jokes.
Fine. Fine. So welcome to the Kilter & Mint podcast. I am here with Dylan Archambault. Who is the co-owner, creative director of Common Ground, which is my favorite studio space in all of Vancouver, located in the Olympic Village. And we've been open for 3 months now. So yay. Mm-hmm.
We are doing it. Just barely.
Just barely, but we are... I mean, this is a podcast where we can be frank about these things.
Yeah.
So why don't we start off like we usually do, share your pronouns, and I'd like for you to do a land acknowledgement.
Oh, okay. Wow. I'm not prepared for any of this. Hello, my name is Dylan Archambault, or as the French say, Dylan Philippe Archambault. My pronouns are he and him. And we are recording this podcast on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish Nations.
Beauty. Thank you so much. Who are you?
Well, you just said I'm a...
Yeah, but like the other stuff.
I'm a Libra. I'm a creature of love. I'm an energetic human being. I'm a son. A friend. a multifaceted individual.
Yes, you are. How did you get into this? How are we here sitting in your studio space?
I was a competitive figure skater for my entire childhood. So I've always been a mover, a shaker. I entered the fitness world when I retired from figure skating. I retired because I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And when I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, I was like, oh, I still want to do athletic things. I want to prove what my body can do. I ran some half marathons and some marathons, and then I got really into spin. And for the most part, originally, spin was one of the workouts that... affected my blood sugar the most. Like it has the ability to regulate your blood sugar for 12 hours after you've gotten yourself to such a high intensity cardio workout.
What is this kind of like Orange Theory when they talk about the splats and you're still burning fat after you leave?
Yeah, essentially. But like, I don't really care about burning fat myself personally. I would rather gain weight. But
and I ask that because I'm like, what the are splats, but now that you put it into more of a context of diabetes.
I actually don't know what splats are. I have no idea what those are.
It's an Orange Theory thing.
Okay. There's this process of like in high intensity workouts, you do get your cortisol up, which actually does slightly raise your blood sugar. So there's this like balancing of what you eat before and what you eat afterwards. And then it like slowly declines for a period of time afterwards, which does make it easier to regulate and eat cheesecake sometimes.
Yeah. Now, what I think is very interesting about you is that you choose not to have a on-body reader.
Yeah.
And you choose to do the needle method for injecting your insulin. Mm-hmm. And I want to know more as to why.
Oh, my God. You're calling me out.
I am totally calling you out.
Yeah. When I go to my diabetic nurse or my endocrinologist, they're always like, do you want to get the pump yet? Do you want to get the pump yet? And this is going to sound so bad because I own a body neutral and gender neutral gym, but the main reason that I don't want it right now in my life is aesthetics. There's like some proven parts of the pump that work more effectively than needles. But I found for myself that I'm able to regulate quite well because I live such an active lifestyle with needles and two different kinds of insulin. And like, there's psychology that goes around with being diabetic where you, it's obviously not life-threatening anymore or completely life-threatening, but there's a idea that there's part of your body that you have no control over or another part of your body that you don't have control over. And the added idea of also looking like a robot in that, like having this thing for myself personally, I'm not at the point where I want that yet.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you. And I...
And
I,
not... That's also to say, like, anyone who uses the pump, I don't think you look like a robot. Like, it's discreet and all of these things, but, like, it feels weird to me to have something attached, something, like, mechanical attached to my body.
Mm-hmm. And I ask this of you because I think this shows that it's not... We're not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And that we are, there are original reasons as to why we got into fitness in the first place. And I think that's part of the journey and making it humanized is like, hey, there's still these aspects about us as to why we want to strive towards something or why there's these social norms when it comes to fitness or the way that we feel like we need to look.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
In society.
When we talk about body neutrality, I don't like walk into the space and I'm like, oh, I feel perfect because I'm completely detached. Like that I'm, none of us are there yet.
Yes. Yeah. Let's segue into that. Why did you decide to open up Common Ground?
I mean, yeah, there was definitely like a aha moment where I was like, oh, this is the industry that I want to be in. When I was a spin instructor, like I just felt the most myself. I had like a tiny segue of being an actor, but like,
You can catch Dylan on the Hallmark movies.
As an elf, yeah.
Where he plays a straight elf.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. That was a good role.
That was a good role, yeah.
Emmy nominated. what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. But I think there's this, like... Yeah, I am my truest self when I'm on a spin bike because I have all of the athleticism of myself as a figure skater... And all of the artistry and, like, actual performance, like, at the end of the day, you are performing for folks in a very informed and effective, I'm going to take care of you kind of way. But it just was, like, that moment of, aha, this is, like, everything that I want and need out of life in one space. And then we looked at the industry in general and how boutique fitness is, like, booming, but it's also at its own... plateau because all of these spaces are just like single concept and then everyone's purchasing their Legree package, purchasing this package, purchasing their yoga package, their spin package, and we saw the direction because it's been happening sort of all in Los Angeles, New York, that like the next step for boutique fitness was multi-use spaces.
So what does that mean, a multi-use space?
It's also just in, like, urban planning as well because spaces are getting so, you know, Olympic Village is, like, just another high-rise spot of Vancouver that's only come up in the last 10 years is when we have less space, you have to use more out of your capacity. So, like, every part of Common Ground was planned for multi-use. We're sitting at the Common table that is going to have a projector, so there can be workshops going on while there's a yoga class, while there's a spin class going on, and trying to utilize spaces as much as possible.
Beautiful. What I love about this was, I remember when I first saw your Instagram, and this was before you had the space, but nothing was being built yet. We were still going through permits. I say we. This was still you. It's not part of it yet.
We're in this together now.
We're in this together. And I remember seeing your Instagram and just the way the aesthetic was different. I didn't feel like it was overly curated. Mm. It felt warm and welcoming, and it felt like a space where I was like, I need to be involved in whatever that is, because the fitness industry in Vancouver needs a shakeup.
Yeah.
And you and I talked about this very politely when we did the East Cherry video, which we'll be dropping soon, like a promotional video. But I feel like fitness in Vancouver is made for able-bodied, skinny, white women who have money.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's twofold, because yes, absolutely, we want to make this accessible for everybody, which means that there needs to be some options for pricing. At the same time, also, it's in Olympic Village, so rent's going to be expensive.
Yeah, like in Vancouver.
Yeah. So we're finding this balance now of like, hey, we can go against the norm and do something differently while also still trying to make money. So my question for you, in a long-winded way, is how are you doing both? And you and I both know the answer to this, but I'd like for other people to hear, like, how do you do this?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you hit the nail on the head, where, like, just straight up, if we weren't at the price point that we're at, we wouldn't be paying our rent. We still aren't paying our rent because we're at such a low capacity because of COVID. And accessibility can look so many different ways. Financial accessibility is just one of the aspects of what we've worked on at Common Ground. And what we've started with is acknowledging that we're in Olympic Village, there are people in this space that can pay this price point, and then expanding to allow for more community classes, allow for more outreach or by donation classes, because that is just what fits in with our ethos right now. And the goal, obviously, is as we get busier and as we're able to sustain ourselves more, we can expand that practice even more. And as a community, we have the Sospeso program too.
So what is it? Sospeso es el sopreso?
Sospreso.
Sospreso. Yo quiero una Taco Bell. No, that's wrong. That is so wrong. Signore.
That was really
wrong. Cappuccino.
There you go.
Grazie.
Aren't you Italian?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Italian-Austrian.
The Sospeso program is essentially based off of suspended coffees, which is an Italian thing. So when you purchase a coffee and you're having a great day, maybe you purchase a suspended coffee for someone coming in who might utilize it.
What does that mean?
Well, I don't really like to say in need, because like in need can mean so many different things, but it's essentially like community work, building accessibility together.
Yeah, cool. I like it different. One of my friends, I feel like I shout her out every single episode, and that's because she absolutely deserves it. So shout out to Sylvia again, posted today on Instagram.
Okay.
And she wrote, wellness community, let me be real for a moment. Looking at some of your sliding scales, I can tell some of y'all have never been a single mom or anywhere near the poverty line.
Ah.
Which her and I have had discussions about this before, and it hits home because we have these air quotes sliding scales, but like even the lowest price point of sliding scale is not always accessible. Like there's a reason why community centers thrive and keep the prices lower so it can actually be truly accessible.
Right.
So what I think is interesting with Class Sopresso,
yeah,
is that it is not a sliding scale. And what's been interesting that you and I have talked about is like, how do you define who, air quotes, deserves this like free class versus not?
Yeah. Well, that's why it's like, what does in need even mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like beauty, it's in the eye of the beholder.
Have we had anyone use them yet?
No, but we just had Atomic Cartoons donate a large sum of money to it. So now
shout
we can
out to
actually,
Atomic
Cartoons. Atomic Cartoons are our neighbors. So yeah, now we can actually start reaching out for that. And wait, I have a question because you had like interesting insights about sliding scale yourself with philosophy and how it maybe did or didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, we did pay what you feel with philosophy, so people could have access to touch and supportive touch. But what I found was that people, I would put the sliding scale, I'd put a little caveat at the bottom being like, hey, these prices are intended so that like you can make it accessible and achieve it. And what I also found was people were using it who were in director levels of different jobs. So there, I find with sliding scale, there's also very open to being abused.
Yeah.
And taken advantage of in that. And what ended up happening is I would teach a class, I'd have sliding scale, and I'd walk out of there with, you know, doing an hour and a half of work and prep into this class, and I would make $25.
Yeah.
In, so it's kind of like a tricky thing where absolutely it needs to be accessible. And what the other piece too is no matter what, the people who might want to access these classes might never ever feel safe coming to a philosophy class because I am a white woman in an able body teaching a class.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So even the people who might need these classes or want to come will never come because of the way that I am, and they will automatically deem the space and me unsafe for them.
Mm-hmm. And that's like literally just something you have to accept, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
I think that even in itself took me a long time to just be like, me as like a cisgendered white man standing in my Lululemon pants at the front of Common Ground, like, in and of itself is just like not going to be accessible to everyone.
Totally.
And another interesting flip side just to that entire conversation, the other side of the coin, literally, is that just like you said, you are a single mother who has to pay your rent, and like the other side of this sliding scale and trying to create accessibility is that we want to uplift our instructors and like pay them as fairly as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm. I feel, I mean, I'm biased because I'm the yoga lead here, but I feel like when I come into this space, I feel like I just get to show up and do my thing.
Mm.
And that people and other instructors who are involved because they want to, and they believe in the ethos behind Common Ground, and that they are treated fairly. And that are, like, shout out to our front of house staff.
Oh, my gosh.
Ugh, because our care team, like, they actually care.
Yeah.
And it makes such a difference when you walk into a space. It's not like they're being paid through classes. Like, it shows, like, well, I mean, hopefully it shows that we really genuinely care about them. And it translates into how they interact with guests as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that there's something different and special about this space as to everyone who's here, because it's not just like, oh, I love fitness. It's like, no, there's more, and there's a bigger purpose.
Yeah, it's like my friend Michelle always mentioned this to me. She's like my main hype woman, and she's the...
I'm sorry, but what about Chelsea? Is Chelsea not your main hype
Chelsea
woman?
Chelsea gasses me up all the time, too.
Okay, okay.
No, my main Common Ground hype woman, she's also the heavily involved in Public Disco, which we did that. And Public Disco does, like, such amazing... Shout out to Public Disco. does really, really amazing work in terms of creating inclusive and queer spaces and safe and brave spaces. But she always talks about, like... NASA and how like they have just one had just one vision statement of we want to put a man on the moon. Should be we want to put a person on the moon.
Yeah.
And there's just like some story that's told in a bunch of leadership things where like they went to some janitor who was working overtime and asked them, well, why are you still here? And it was, oh, because I'm here to put a man on the moon. And it's this idea of like collectively having one single vision and all wanting to work towards that I see really clearly at Common Ground. And like that's what lights me up the most, is this like community of people who just want to work towards one like single aspect of social wellness and like just work towards more equity in this one field, because it's all of the macro interactions. It's every single industry that needs to be shaken up. And we're just so lucky to have a space to do it within fitness and wellness.
Yes. Okay, so you and I, we're two white, able-bodied people.
Mm.
And I want us to talk about, from a white lens,
yeah,
hiring diverse instructors,
mm-hmm,
and the conversations we've had to avoid tokenism.
Mm-hmm.
Because
let's
I think
just take a moment of silence for our privilege.
Yes, exactly. I want to bring this up because
yeah,
a lot of my listeners are also white, and I yeah, think about like when they're bringing in talent, uh-huh, and bringing in different people. How do you make sure that there isn't that? And hopefully, I mean, like I'm just speaking from my experience that our instructors and our care team don't feel like they are being tokenized.
Because yeah,
it's always the impact over intention. Like our intention, of course, is never to tokenize, and
let's just call it what it is. Like, we've made our mistakes, like, in the process of doing this. 100%.
Yeah.
There's no way that we can be like, we never tokenized a single person in the process of opening Common Ground. And that's just like from the fact that, like, especially in the Vancouver landscape, every single yoga instructor is a white, skinny, cisgendered woman.
They're all Beckys.
Exactly. You included.
Oh, yeah. I'm a Becky. Don't get me wrong.
And to, like, shake that up, you have to do more intentional hiring. And that means digging a little bit, you know? I lost my train of thought.
Digging. Privilege. Hiring.
Yeah, it means, like, maybe to give opportunity to someone who isn't a Becky, you have to go out and find them. And, you know, we said from the beginning that maybe it's not an instructor who's had 10 to 15 years of experience, because traditionally or historically in Vancouver, that's been a certain type of person. And maybe it's someone that we can bring in who has an amazing personality and amazing energy that they bring to the room. And we can put more work into, like, turning them into the instructor they need to be.
Cool. What type of work is being done to turn, to grow our business and to stay true to our ethos and our roots?
You tell me, yoga lead.
Well, shit. Okay, so I'll answer my own question.
Okay.
As a yoga lead, my roles and responsibilities are to, part of the original process was part of hiring,
mm-hmm,
and bringing in our instructors. So a lot of it was word of mouth, I found, with like which instructors were, air quotes, good or going to be a good fit for us. And then it's like this person knew this person and getting to go out to their classes and getting to know them.
Mm-hmm.
And then for ensuring that all of our teachers are on the same level, we've done a D&I training with our in-house D&I specialist and general manager, Jesse. And we've also done some, I want to say capsule training of trauma, like, mm-hmm, trauma training,
mm-hmm,
with yoga outreach with our team as well, distanced.
Tiddly?
Tiddlywinks? Distance.
Yeah.
And so we've done that. And then it's just constant pulse checks, checking in with our instructors, seeing how they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
We
will be continuing trauma-informed trainings and
yes,
decolonizing trainings when we have our
hire.
Feet under our ground. Is that the term? Feet on the ground.
Ground under our feet. Grounded, one of our classes, please come every Wednesday, 6:45 p.m. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been an interesting whirlwind as to when we're hiring. It's not even about the experience that they bring.
Yeah.
What I've been finding is, like, does their values line up?
Uh-huh.
Are they out there making a change? Are they out there stirring shit up?
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to see you in dancer's pose on top of a mountain on your Instagram. You know, I don't need to see your midriff and all these things for all your pictures. Like, there's just, how are you actually making an impact in your community?
And I feel like at the beginning of it, it was more difficult to, straight up tokenize people. When we were just a concept, just a twinkle in everyone's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can already see the shift of, there is a period of, like, gaining trust as a white person because for years it's just been performative or just lip service, and slowly but surely I think people actually see and come in that it's not just an ethos, that like words are put into action, and so more and more folks are like, okay, yes, this is a space that I I want to be brave in.
Cool. Let's talk about body neutral and gender neutral, because that is part of our ethos as well as Social Wellness Collective. So why is gender neutral really important to you? You're welcome.
I think that I'm a queer man, super gay,
super femme, and I love every moment of it.
And my experience in the fitness world, because I've been in it for such a long time, is of toxic masculinity, and that feeds its way and parallels just with the queer community in general. Like, we are, we're ripe with masculinity. We can talk about Grindr for hours and how, like, problematic it is. And what I've found is that the idea of gender, or having to perform your gender or be attached to your gender, is a universal feeling. Like, it just shows itself in different ways. So when you come into a space, you automatically have to perform your femininity for someone. And that just gets in the way. And it gets in the way, especially in fitness, because part of performing your femininity or masculinity is shaping a body. And it just does not have to be that, because there's so much more to moving your body, and there's so much more that a consistent and like holistic wellness practice can have in your life. That we just wanted to be a space where we're like, okay, if we just try as much as possible to get rid of that one barrier, what else do we open up?
Boy, oh boy, did we ever open a can of worms. Gosh, I would say like that was the most interesting learning before we opened our doors, when we were coming up with our training and what we wanted our teachers to be doing, like land acknowledgements, using your pronouns at the start of each class.
Yeah.
And then it just became, there's so, it's Pandora's box in terms of like, if you want to make it accessible, you gotta look at everything. Like, you gotta look at your egress. Is this wheelchair accessible? What about for hearing impaired or visually impaired? Like, this spectrum of how we can make this more accessible just opens up. And I feel like we are at a point where we're still biting off small piece by piece.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. And it's also interesting. We did that panel. And Kendra Copeland had all that beautiful stuff to say about like creating containers.
Yes.
And how if you create a container for everyone, it actually doesn't work because it does not have structure anymore. And
elaborate on it for people who are listening, because they won't know what you're talking about.
That didn't make sense. I'm just kidding. Well, we're just talking about creating containers, aka creating like brave space for as many people as possible. The container being like the safety that you're trying to create for them. However, the word safety is like within the eye of the beholder. So we can never say to someone, "Oh, this has to be safe to you." That's for you to decide. But like you said, we're trying to bite it off piece by piece to try and make our container as large as possible, but still like maintain the structure of it. And so slowly but surely, we're working towards financial accessibility, towards how ableist fitness is in general. And that's like almost unavoidable, but what steps can you take slowly but surely to widen that container?
Got it. Yeah. Cool. Makes sense. I noticed that you also didn't say make sense there. Way to go, Dylan.
Oh, yeah. That's a fun one, isn't it? Have fun. I gotten rid of that from my vocabulary? No.
You're pretty much there. Quite. I'm a little bit of a vocabulary stickler. And so when Dylan and I talk afterwards, he'll say, "Does that make sense?" And so I've been working with Dylan to take that out of his vocabulary, so that makes it sound more confident.
More confident. And also, like, other feedback I've gotten on that is when I say, "Does that make sense?" It's like me questioning your ability to intake my information. Like, I've heard people, like, they're like, you sound like a dick. And I'm like, oh, that was not my intention at all. Like, I want to make sure that I'm articulating properly, because, like, I would always rather write my entire idea out in an email rather than just, like, talk to you about it. Mm. It's how I communicate better.
Yeah, yeah. How are you feeling right now with how far we've come along in our episode so far and the things we've talked about?
Good, but I... Yeah, good, good. Well, how are you feeling?
I'm good. I just feel like there's so many different ways that we could take this conversation and mm-hmm. so many things that we could talk about. And there's something that's really important that I think needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this will really show the humanity in you. So
are you talking about me, sweaty pits?
No, no, no. You're fine. You're not that sweaty.
Okay.
Yeah. Yet. I mean, a little on your forehead. That's fine. So... one of the reasons why I signed on for Common Ground was when I got to know you as a person.
Mm.
And it was this one story. And if you're open to it, I would love for you to share when you got your finger stuck in a drain.
Why?
Because it's such a good story and it needs to be shared.
Okay, okay, okay. It was a Sunday afternoon and I had been day drinking just a little bit, but I don't think I was drunk. I was just mostly tipsy. Maybe drunk. and I got home, and I don't know if you ever noticed, but I'm a very hairy person.
Yes.
And I went into my bathroom because I was going to do a 12-step face care routine, as you do after a few Caesars. And my sink was clogged with all of my hair. and naturally, I was like, oh, I'll just use my finger to get this out of the drain. And you know how, like, a drain has, like, a... it has the trap to, like, let overflow come back into it? There's, like, a little hole in the drain.
Yes.
My finger sort of got stuck in that. And I proceeded to be stuck there for like 4 hours. My phone was like on the other side of my apartment. There was no phoning Surrey. And I literally went through every single emotion possible. I was like, hey, this is really funny. I cried. I like tried to grab shampoo from my bathtub to like use as lube. I had a giant bite mark on my bicep because I was like trying 127 hours it and like bite down so that I could sort of rip my finger out because it was the actual nail bed that was like keeping it from moving.
Ugh.
I almost fell asleep there and I was like, I'll just deal with this tomorrow. And then somehow I summoned the superhuman strength because it was a wall mounted sink to like rip it off of the wall. And I also thought that I was smart about it and like turned off the water before I did that, but I didn't fully turn it off, so the water was like misting up into my face. Oh, also I was naked the whole time, which just makes it even better. Even better. And then I had to phone my friend Megan, who lives across the hall from me. I like put tidy whities on, but that's all I could really get into. And then there's this like, it could have been in a movie. She like opens my door and I'm standing in the middle of my living room holding my sink and my tidy whities. And all I could get out was like, oh, I've gone and done it.
I've gone and done it.
And then like, yeah, that whole thing could be like a short film because there was like, she tried to get it out. She tried to like lube it up in different ways. Then we were like, okay, we need to break the sink off of the drain, and she went and like got a hammer, and there's this like moment where I'm like sitting on the ground and she's standing above me and she's like, okay, well what if I miss and hit your finger and break it, or what if like the neighbors hear, or what other stuff. And then she hammers the sink out of the drain, and then I just have a metal drain stuck to me. And anyways, long story short, we had to go to the hospital. They had to get the jaws of life. I'm wearing like safety goggles and they're like clipping the drain off of me. Everyone's laughing their face off of me. They didn't even admit me either. They did the entire process in the waiting room so that like everyone else was watching me and what was going on. So, and then like a few months later, I was telling a story to someone who's a doctor and they're like, oh, that was you. As it was talked about at VGH.
Oh, I just love you so much.
I am a human being.
You are a human being. Not a human doing in that instance. Just a human being.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for that.
Okay, now let's switch back. Let's talk about body neutrality. We just need that segue in between.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little, what do you call it in between a movie?
The bridge? Oh, that's in a song.
No, you know when you like step out, like matinee, the interlude? Intermission.
Intermission.
Thank you for that intermission.
Yes.
Body
Stage
neutrality.
Stage lights down. Yeah.
Watch your fingers. Catch the hair.
Yeah. That's why I wax now. I'm just kidding. I always wax. What is there to say about body neutrality? Body neutrality essentially is an act of allyship to so many people. I think when you look at the world, the body is political, and there's so many different assets of or aspects of social justice issues that are so closely tied to the body. We tell people how they should be in their body. We tell people how their body should look, and the fitness industry just sort of amplifies that by focusing too much on the result of fitness having to be a changed body. And at the end of the day, you can eat the exact same diet as someone, work out the exact same way as someone, and your bodies are not going to look the same. Mm-hmm. So body neutrality to us is an up-leveling from body positivity, which says you just have to like your body all the time. Body neutrality just says you can be in whatever relationship you want to be with your body. It does not have to be linear. It does not have to stay the same all the time. And you can still come move your body for so many different reasons.
Cool. Something, I led a class or a series for SFU gender and women's studies. Mm-hmm. And we broke it down into different groups, about three different classes, and there's a talk at the beginning. So there's one that was around cultural appropriation, one that was around consent, my favorite topic, and then we did the last one on body neutrality and gender neutrality in yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And something that came up through this talk was this aspect of body positivity was taken as a way to reclaim your body, specifically for people who were fat or in larger bodies.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing a lot now around body positivity, it's actually still able-bodied, air quotes.
It's an acceptable fat, essentially.
It's an acceptable fat, and it's saying things like, oh my gosh, look, I bend over to the side, and here's like my love handle, or mm-hmm. oh, I've got cellulite. You know, I think about people who have major platforms who are doing a great job of like normalizing post baby bodies, like the bird's papaya, but you're still actually a very attractive woman. You're still a very successful woman. You are still white.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this piece around this body positivity where it's actually being taken over again by white women. And I laugh because it seems like we just can't keep our hands off of anything.
Seriously, how dare you? Yeah, and I think another aspect of body neutrality versus body positivity, and I can't speak to the trans experience at all, but like the trans experience and body dysmorphia essentially like shows you right there that you don't have to just be happy with your body. Like psychologically, you do not have to. And like, that's exactly why gender affirming surgery exists. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. us just telling people that is almost bypassing. It's almost like a sense of the exact same thing as toxic positivity, which is like, instead of being able to feel all your feelings and process them properly, you are told to just focus on the positivity of it all.
Mm-hmm. I even think for myself with philosophy, like the name says it all, philosophy is mm-hmm. Our MO is to get people in their bodies.
Yeah.
And for them to be able to feel whatever they feel. And something that's been coming to light for me the last few months, especially not being able to teach philosophy because of COVID, is sometimes I don't want to feel. And that's also okay as well. Mm-hmm. So it's always like feel, be in your feelings, feel all these things, like positive and negative, even though there's no such thing as like a positive negative emotion.
Yeah.
But just feeling the whole spectrum of emotions, sometimes it also is not safe for me to feel, or I don't have the resources to be able to feel and then go on with my day. Like, I might be stuck
100%.
There.
I've been thinking about that so much lately, and I've been changing that language in my classes a little bit, where, because in yoga a lot, they talk about how the healing is in processing your feelings in a safe, in a brave space.
Yeah.
But I used to talk about how once those doors are closed and we're in this dark room, like, that's your break from the day. But realistically, it can either be your complete break, or it can be your catharsis. It can be where you find your healing. It can be where you're processing. And I think that's, like, one of the goals of Common Ground is to be able to be both of those spaces, because the other side of that is that there, it's corny, but there's no, you can't have wellness without we. That's the corny part.
Is that like a live, laugh,
you
love?
You can't have wellness without we.
And the bridge. Live, laugh, love. You gotta live, laugh. You gotta live, laugh, love. You gotta live, laugh, love.
Yeah.
Some hoes in the cup.
You're taking it everywhere right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there's this duality to it where, like, and that's why we talk about taking care of groups who are maybe more marginalized, is that if you're living your entire life in fight or flight and then you just need to come to move to, like, forget about it, fuck yeah, do that. But also, a lot of times self-care itself can be, like, taken too far without understanding that, like, I'm actually taking care of myself so that I can then go be there for others and take care of others. Self-care without self-actualization, and self-actualization is actually just, like, knowing your whole self, knowing your whole potential, and in knowing your whole potential, you also have to know the emotional impact you have on other people, can actually just be self-righteousness. So there's, like, two different sides to that. It's like, fuck, if you need to take care of yourself right now, if you need that break, take it. But also know that, like, a whole self-care practice is for the greater good at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. I've been finding that with... It was really tricky to navigate going back to teaching yoga immediately after the death of George Floyd and seeing the overt anti-black racism, not only in the States, and seeing everyone protest and for there to a rise up for change, but also here in Canada. It felt really sticky to then go back to yoga and be like, I mean, I never say namaste anyways, but to be like, oh, and here, let's practice our happy baby and child's pose and, like, find your pigeon. You might have an emotional release.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this, I'm very fortunate to have the platform to be able to speak very frankly and be like, yo, this isn't just yoga, but yoga can also be a very political practice. And I think as a yoga or fitness instructor or anyone who gets in front of a group, that you have an obligation to acknowledge and to get people into their bodies so that they can be that catalyst for change or support change.
Yeah, because whether you're healing for yourself, whether you're healing for other people, like, you're like Spider-Man as the instructor. Like, you have a great responsibility.
Well, and we have enough instructors who aren't taking, not we as in Common Ground, but we as a society have enough instructors who are doing the bypassing without acknowledging what is going on, or getting in front of large groups, whether it be in person or online, and not doing land acknowledgements or not acknowledging Black Lives Matter or the cultural appropriation of yoga, that we don't need any more of that in our society. Every single minute of a yoga practice can be political.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that's, like, the next step within being trauma-informed as an instructor, is knowing that it can be both, because that's only a realization that I've had, like, recently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we do put our bodies in distress so much, so sometimes you just need to...
Mm-hmm.
De-stress. But what's the next step when you're like, okay, I'm still going to take care of myself? Where do I take that every chemical, every, like, positive thing that I have put into my body, the love and the light of it, when I've dealt with the darkness, where do I take that then?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like we always look at yoga as like, what's the next progression of a shape,
mm-hmm.
right? To find that like peak or climatic or challenging yourself in your body. But now it's like, no, we don't necessarily need to challenge the body. Now we need to challenge the mind.
There you go. Boom. Bingo.
Boom.
Wow.
Guess what? 12 o'clock Arcteryx. You know what's coming. We're challenging your mind today. No worry. We got time.
We have time.
Oh, okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah. We don't need to set up the live stream equipment or anything because I'm just going to do like what I usually do in my garage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because of the sound or something.
YouTube. Yeah, because I messed up the sound last time.
Mm.
So we do live stream at Common Ground now. And a couple of weeks ago, I was teaching for my Arcteryx crew. Shout out to the Arcteryx family. And hooked it up. But I played around with the knobs. You know me. And knobs. Can't keep my hands off them. And it just messed up the sound. But I'm not going to play around with that today.
Mm-hmm.
No
mm-hmm.
knobs in my life. I want to talk about... what do I want to say here? I want to talk about white men being the gatekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
White gay men being the gatekeepers of uplifting others.
Yeah. 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 I want to talk about that too. I don't know why, but the last like 2 years of my life has just been reading and trying to understand my queer identity because I don't want to sound like that Taylor Swift Americana thing, you know, where she's like, well, I was just told as a white country singer that I had to be this white country singer in a certain way. But like, as a 19-year-old white gay, when you're told like, okay, Davie Street is a spot, go check it out. It's like a very white space. And you're trying to understand your identity without any roadmap to it. You're just like, okay, this is like what we do. You just get like trapped in thinking that this sort of Davie Street white cisgendered toxic space is what being queer is, and this is like a very nuanced conversation because we're at such an interesting crossroad in our queer LGBTQI existence where like we have to acknowledge one, we're in North America, so there's more legal support in being a queer person, there's more equality in being a queer person. That doesn't mean that other parts of the world and even within North America there isn't a huge amount of homophobia and transphobia and discrimination that happens. And we have to acknowledge when we have this conversation that there are still people before us who like fought for our lives to be where they're at. But with how progress works, it doesn't just mean like, okay, they fought for us, so let's stop progressing. It means, okay, what are the other things that we have to deal with?
Mm-hmm.
And also the nuance of it is to acknowledge that being queer and like queer people and queer communities are so, so, so beautiful in so many different ways. But you can't just love and light it all. There's like a darkness to it as well. And that's sort of the place I guess I'm getting to in my life is I'm like, okay, I'm a queer white person. There were times when like there's this narrative of like, oh, I came out of the closet. That was so hard. So now I'm just going to do whatever I want. You know what I mean? I don't want to do that anymore. Because like you said, we are at the top of a ladder. We have the key to the gate. There's so many people whose voices we can uplift now. There's so many marginalized people that we can uplift. But as a community, we have to do our healing. Just like statistically, there's still more addiction, substance abuse, suicide within the LGBTQI community. And I don't know, I get lost in what I want to say here.
Yeah. the conversations and narratives that I've heard from you and what you've shared is that white gay men still have so many more privileges than lesbian women, than black or indigenous queer people, than trans people.
Asexual people, intersex people.
Everyone. And what I've heard you share is that there's a lot of privilege and there's a lot of social acceptance of also being a fit white gay male. Whereas people look at, you know, I'm just hypothesizing here, maybe they don't look to gay women the same way. You know, like it's like, oh, you're, oh, like Dylan's like my gay best friend.
Yeah.
Right? So there's like a certain level of social acceptance and normalization versus someone who is asexual or trans. There's still a little bit of.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It's interesting because, yes, absolutely. Like, essentially, that's what I'm trying to say. But what it feels like white, cis, queer men have to do is acknowledge their trauma more so then they can like be the oppressed oppressor or understand their position as the oppressed oppressor.
Ooh, oppressed oppressor. Yes, that's it.
That's a good one. And there was a podcast that I was listening to recently that spoke to psychic trauma, which I think exists as even a woman, which essentially is like, I haven't experienced straight out violence towards me, but the psychic trauma of walking down a street at night as a female is still its own trauma. Whereas maybe as a cisgendered straight, or sorry, cisgendered queer white man, you haven't experienced outright violence, but you have experienced the microaggression of growing up in a world that was not made for you. And the psychic trauma of trying to navigate heteronormativity in so many different ways. Like, when you break it down just, like, wording-wise, heterosexual is attraction to an opposite sex, whereas homosexual is attracted to the same sex. But what there was no roadmap given for, like, how you navigate a relationship with that attraction. There is, like, research on how it in itself creates its own competitiveness, and that's why that's where all this toxic masculinity and the culture of, like, femme-shaming and bottom-shaming and all of this comes from. No one really taught us to navigate that. So I guess that's why I say as a whole community, we have to do that work. And then in acknowledging our privilege, we're like, okay, that was the work that we had to do. And then what about everyone who has every other stockpile of this, like, lack of equality?
Yes. Yes.
I got there. It took a second, but maybe I got there.
No, you got there. It was great. Also, did you hear my sneaky fart?
Did you fart?
I tried to
kill him. If I smell it, I'll be pissed.
No, you won't. You know the smell of my farts. Thank you for that. That's beautiful. And I think there is, like, a lot of work that still needs to be done. And it's also something that as someone as a who's straight can also conceptualize that. Like the oppressed oppressor and, like, the inner workings of other communities.
Well, even being, like, a white female, you are an oppressed oppressor.
Yeah.
And, I guess that's the thing. In my mind, I'm like, does that not create more empathy? More compassion, but, like, you have to, like, you have to heal from your oppression to be able to see with clarity, oh shit, okay.
And it's opening your eyes to different things over and over again, and when you think your eyes are open, it's like, nope, there's a whole other layer you got to go down.
And when I said heal, I didn't like that term because you're always going to be healing and always going to be growing. Yeah. How's your dating life?
Ugh. It's fine. I mean, it's okay. It's just so interesting to feel the highs and lows, you know? And what I've loved is that you and I have been on this journey together.
We have.
Dylan and I have been going through the we hate men, we love men, we're in love, we're not, I'm going to marry this person. No, I'm not. And I'm at a point where I with the support of my therapist, shout out to my therapist, you're the best in the entire world, is that I am really taking steps to shift the focus onto myself because I have so many moving parts in my life, which I absolutely love. Mm-hmm. And I don't think dating necessarily needs to be a priority, or recognizing how much energy dating apps were taking up.
Okay.
So I got rid of my dating apps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking to one person, and I'm also in a place where if things don't work out, that I am working on being comfortable being single.
Mm-hmm.
And not searching for anything.
I think I've been comfortable being single for so long. I've been single for like 5 years. And I think one of the things that I need to work on is I take things that gay men say to me, maybe because all of the previous like shit we just talked about, I take them so much more personally than if you were to say that to me. And I haven't really experienced or understood why. One of the things that I'm learning is the difference between in interpersonal relationships. I think you can create boundaries with systems and everything else very cut and dry, but in an interpersonal relationship, creating a boundary and understanding your boundary takes this like radical vulnerability as well. I think too easily we set a boundary with someone without explaining it or saying, hey, this is what I actually need from you, and allowing them the space to like come up to that boundary or meet you at that boundary.
Yeah.
We just create a wall of this is what I need. I'm not even going to tell you. You have to guess. You know what I mean? Like, does that? I feel like I find that happen in so many different relationships from myself and from the other person.
Yeah. I mean, in the words of Dora Kamau, it's like boundaries and barriers. It's
yeah.
Like what
yeah,
you
yeah.
think is a boundary that you're setting is actually more of a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I feel really open all the time. Like, I feel like I'm constantly opening myself up and trusting yeah. people innately. And I'm very grateful that after my previous relationships, I'm still have it
able
in
to do that. Yeah.
yeah. Which takes like a certain level of resilience and trust and like working through my shit. But I'm also like, yeah, I want someone who's going to rise up and make me a priority and treat me the way I want to be treated. And through these relationships and navigating them, I'm starting to become more clear with myself.
Yeah.
And I think it's more of my boundaries within myself.
I think every relationship that I've ever actually had pretty much ended because the person was like, whoa, that emotion is too much for me. Or like, or I took it as that, which could be either way. But for years of my life, it would just be me taking it as that and not seeing that my emotion and my vulnerability is actually like my major power.
Yes.
And so when you say, yeah, I'm shifting this back to myself, is that like, I agree. It is on that person to see me fully and be like, oh, wow. Oh my God, there's a dog fully pooing right there.
Oh my God, he's taking a giant
in front of Common Ground? How dare!
Oh my God, everyone listening, there's a giantly Great Dane literally took a giant dump right in front of our main window where
on
we
the
were
concrete,
ew.
Too. Like, where's the decorum? That is a big dog.
That is a giant dog. That was a giant dump. Holy moly. That was like a guard dog. Okay, well, thanks.
Are you editing that out?
No, of course not. That's staying in for sure. If we're talking about your finger being stuck in a drain and you're naked, we're keeping that. My wish for you is that you are able, that someone will come into your life, not that you find, because you're not searching, that there will be someone who sees you for all the worth that you are and sees you the way that I see you. Where you aren't questioning yourself, where we aren't texting each other frantically, sending screenshots of conversations, being like, what does this mean? I
yeah.
want someone who like sees you the way I see you.
Yeah, yeah. But I also, I thank you for that. And I want the exact same thing for you because you're so beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Inside and out. I was literally going to text you this the other day. Don't have many people who, especially in this business, I obviously can't go to our care team and be like, I'm having such a hard time. This is so stressful. I don't have many people that I can do that with right now. Mm-hmm. And the amount of times that you just literally check in to be like, how is your heart with all of this, your dating life? You are what the wellness industry needs. You know what I mean? The wellness industry is about at the end of the day, not just taking care of people physically, taking care of people's hearts and understanding that impact.
Thank you.
And it's a major win for me because that last relationship that ended, I didn't freak out and be like, how dare you do this to me, as I would in previous... And that's it, where it's just like, hey, this is where I'm at emotionally. You need to know where I'm at emotionally. I'm not doing this in any sort of unhealthy way. I'm just saying this to you. And that's it.
And I think that's where we have been growing together.
Yeah.
Is that both you and I are growing through the discomfort, because maybe we're getting a little bit more well-versed and seen into our discomfort, and like when we do fuck things up at Common Ground,
to
into that. And now the next step is like we're actually going global back to smaller,
yeah,
as to our community. When we mess up, we're sitting into it, owning our discomfort and like being there. And now it's like, actually, we need to take that more on a personal level, mm-hmm, in our interpersonal relationships. It's like, okay, I actually need to sit into this discomfort. When a certain somebody, you know who you are, doesn't text me for 3 days.
I'm just going to like repeat back what you said, because I feel like I've had that exact same experience where like, during all of BLM, where I would get my back up because of my white fragility or my savior complex, I have been in the learning of being able to more quickly be like, no, like, sit with that. Sit with what that person said to you. See it, hear it, be with it, sit in the discomfort, and then act. I think that's one of the things that Common Ground does really well, is like vetting the feeling, vetting the what we put out into our ethos. And that in itself did teach me on a macro level how to sit with a feeling better. Isn't that wild?
Wild. I feel like we just
discovered something. It's like the world is being shaken up. Wow. And we just have to allow it to shake us up, because it is going to affect you on a personal level too.
Oh my gosh, I have goosebumps just thinking about that. Oh my gosh.
Beep, beep, beep.
I feel like Anita, shout out to Anita, who helped us with our website and who is like holier than thou.
Literally.
God, Anita.
The most creative person. Just whips stuff up out of nowhere.
Just that little whippersnapper.
Couldn't have imagined, yeah.
Gosh. Anyway, shout out to Anita. If you need any work with websites, copy, graphics, whatever, please, please, for the love of God, or not God,
Goddess.
Goddess, please reach out to Anita. She is Create With Neats on Instagram. I just want to give her a major shout out because she's been instrumental in my business.
Mm. Yeah,
but her
ours.
Boyfriend, Rob, shout out to Rob Station, number 5 sports DJ in all of Vancouver. He's, I don't know.
What's a sports DJ? Like, that's another conversation.
Like fitness DJ.
What does that mean?
Like a fitness DJ. Like plays music for fitness.
Oh, okay.
You know?
All the same BPM sort of thing.
No, like he just plays really great music.
Okay, I need to explore this afterwards then.
Yeah, Rob is amazing. Shout out to Rob. But what Rob, I remember anytime there's like fitness events or whatever and someone would do a shout out, he'd always go, bleep, bleep, bleep. So anytime I hear that noise, I just picture Rob Station on his little thing, twisting little knobs.
Yeah.
We're at an hour.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And I feel like there is so many more things that we could talk about.
For sure.
I feel like we've had a roller coaster of our highs and lows.
Yeah. I'm in my discomfort right now.
Are you really?
No, I don't know. This was like, I asked you to do this. You know what I mean? I was like, put me on your phone. Because I'm obsessed with myself.
Oh my
God. Because... like that, especially the stuff we talked about in understanding your privilege as a white cis man, like that's the next step that I want for myself, is to like advocate as that person more. And that means my ability to articulate.
And you're doing great, sweetie.
So thank you for giving me this opportunity to just like chat, and I feel okay about it. I'm gonna let my insecurities fly for a bit after this, but it'll be fine.
No, and I didn't want just the surface stuff.
Yeah, it's boring.
I would like for us to finish with maybe giving some shout-outs, some resources, people who are inspiring you right now, whatever.
Oh my God, sorry. Gosh. Okay. Okay.
I'm going to start off with a podcast that I listened to recently that has just got me thinking a lot, and our conversation's very timely around it when you talk about the oppressed oppressor and what things are based off of. And I'm thinking of Stonewall and disco. And disco was for, like, made by queer men.
Mm-hmm.
Queer
mm-hmm.
black men. Black community.
Yeah.
And I listened to this podcast that just really opened my eyes to the history of disco and also the demise of disco.
Mm-hmm.
So I would recommend listening to Disco Demolition Night, which is the You're Wrong About podcast by Michael Hobbs and Sarah Marshall. They have another...
You're Wrong About? Can you
You're
say that
again?
You're
Wrong About. Okay. That's what it's called.
Okay.
My friend Siobhan, shout out to Siobhan, introduced me to their episode on human trafficking, which is a whole other topic that we could absolutely get into on another
mm-hmm.
episode.
Mm-hmm.
But Disco Demolition Night has been really eye-opening for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm currently listening to their episode on exorcism. So,
oh my goodness.
Listen to this podcast.
Okay, I'm going to try and talk about this and not go too far into it, because I could talk about this whole topic, especially when we were going into gender neutrality.
Yep.
I've been listening to, like, every single episode of the podcast LGBTQ&A, which is a podcast by The Advocate, which is a queer magazine that has existed for ever. It's with Jeffrey Masters, and they just essentially do Q&A sessions with queer icons. There's ones with drag queens. The Shea Coulee one was really good. The Laverne Cox one was amazing.
Ooh, Laverne Cox.
Do you know Alok Vaid Menon? Sorry.
Nope.
Who's like a non-binary artist, performance artist, poet. He's amazing. And then I recently listened to a podcast with Rain Dove, and it like opened my eyes to the idea of gender in such a different way. Rain Dove is a non-binary model, and they talked about, like, the first time they did a Calvin Klein show, they originally showed up to a casting, and the casting directors were like, oh, you're here on the wrong day, you have to come back, because they mistook them as a male. And then cast them, and then there was this moment where they came out, like, in the underwear, because it was Calvin Klein underwear with tits. and, like, everyone just, like, freaked out, because it literally was just, like, a giant mistake. But they talked about gender, and I could get into, because I've been doing a lot of research on what it means to be intersex. But essentially, like, gender is classified by four different things. There's, like, DNA, chromosomes, your actual gonads, testes, or...
Genitalia.
I can't remember what the other one is. But you're only tested... hormones as well. The only reason that a baby would ever be tested is if they had incorrect or... Oh my gosh, I don't want to say incorrect, abnormal or different genitalia than the binary of male and female. And then that's why they would diagnose someone who is intersex. But there's so many cases about being intersex where it might have been like years later that they had a surgery and it was found out that there was actually testes where there might be ovaries.
Mm.
And it, this podcast just touched on this because Rain Dove was essentially like, we put the binary on people just right off the bat, whereas even a hormone could be different, or one chromosome could be different and never seen. And those hormones could manifest in so many different ways throughout your growth. It just opened my eyes to the fact that, like, what is male and female? Because there's so many variables, and the only time we actually test for those variables, if they're like, oh, that, like, penis looks a little weird, let's, like, explore that. And also, everyone should just, like, look into being intersex and how to support intersex people, because for, I think it was not until 2006... that they started changing how surgeries go for intersex people. Essentially, before that point, if there was something different in chromosomes, they would not only without consent do surgeries on children to change that and assign a gender to them, but then they also, doctors and physicians demanded that you keep it a secret from the child, because the fear was that it would create gender dysphoria and lead to other mental health issues. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, what they actually did was, at some point, they were like, something feels weird about my gender. They're already still experiencing that. That's only changed recently, and there's, like, still people coming up today who have dealt with this. It's just another part of our community being LGBTQIA, where it's like, do we even know much about the I? Do we know enough about being asexual? How do we support these people?
Yes, yes. And I think that's a whole other conversation too. You know, I'm so used to saying LGBTQ2+.
Yeah.
And I and A, and people don't know what the rest stand for, and it's up to us to educate ourselves. So cool. Dylan, thank you so much. I love you.
Thank you. I love you too.
I feel like there's just so much more we could have talked about. Please, please, please come check out Common Ground. See us in the Olympic Village. We're on West 2nd near Ontario. Beautiful, beautiful studio space.
Your first class is free. We're at less than 50% capacity. Major cleaning procedures. And if you don't feel safe coming into the space yet, your first live stream class is free as well. And we're building out that program more and more. And it's beautiful.
Yay. And where can people find you?
Me.
You.
On Instagram at... me and Ash run the Common Ground Instagram together, so follow CMMNGRNDYVR. And my personal Instagram is darchambault, ARCHAMBAULT 91.
Because you are a small human, as in a child.
Yes.
91.
Oh my God, shut up.
Whatever, you're 90.
I'm an adult.
Barely. Okay, love you all. Bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Kilter and Mint podcast. If you like what you heard, please be sure to leave a rating and review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. And a special shout out to Dylan for being his full weird self. God, I love that guy. And as Dr. or Auntie Bonnie would like to say, be kind, be calm, be safe. Remember to wash your hands. And can't wait to see you on the next episode. Okay, bye.